purchase a home. You've been sitting on the sidelines because the market is just too crazy. If only someone could make sense of it all. Hi, I'm Rob West. Well, there's no question, and in times like these, you need all the good advice you can get, and we know just the guy to give you sound, practical, and spiritual advice for buying a home. He's Dale Vermillion, and he joins us today, and then it's on to your calls at 800-525-7000. That's 800-525-7000. You can call right now. This is Faith and Finance on American Family Radio. Biblical wisdom for your financial decisions. Well, we're delighted to have Dale Vermillion with us again today. Dale is the author of The Mortgage Maze, The Simple Truth About Financing Your Home. And Dale, it's always great to have you with us.
Rob, it's an honor and a blessing to be here. Thank you.
Absolutely. Dale, we've got a lot to cover today, and of course, we'll be taking your phone calls, folks, specifically in this first portion of the broadcast on mortgages and buying a home, anything that Dale can help you navigate on those topics. We'd love to hear from you at 800-525-7000. You can call right now. But Dale, interest rates, of course, are always a huge factor when folks consider buying a house. We've seen a major run-up in interest rates. So what's the trend right now?
Yeah, the trend is rates continue to rise. We've seen a steady climb over the last 30 to 40 days, specifically in the last 2 weeks. And, you know, part of that's because of the Fitch downgrade that we saw of U.S. debt. Part of that is inflation numbers came up. And part of that is just that the bond market doesn't like where the economy is at right now. When you match that with the fact that the Fed's no longer buying mortgage-backed securities, all of those things just keep pushing rates up a little bit. We believe they'll go down by the end of the year. All of the predictions are somewhere between 6% and 6.25%. But for right now, we're sitting at about a 7.3% rate for today.
Yeah, which over the long haul, I mean, if we look back over decades, that's still a fairly attractive interest rate, despite the fact we've gotten accustomed to rates below 3. Isn't that right?
Since 1971, the national average has been 7.75. So we're still below that, which is good news.
Yeah. It doesn't mean, though, people are excited about it, though, because if they're giving up that 2.5 to move and getting something in the sevens, that just that doesn't feel right. And it makes home affordability a challenge, especially, Dale, when you couple those interest rates with just the prices of homes these days, right?
That's exactly right. I mean, the challenge you've got right now, affordability is probably the biggest challenge we face out in addition to inventory, of course. But new construction starts are way up. We saw a 22% increase in the month of July. So that's starting to create some inventory. We're seeing a 7.5 month supply right now in that. So things are improving slowly. But yes, affordability is truly the issue.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Let's dive into those interest rate numbers here for a moment and just talk about what you're expecting moving forward. So you said we're north of 7 right now. You expect us to be perhaps 6 or slightly below 6 as soon as the end of the year. Where do you think we kind of land over the course of 2024, just based on what we know today?
You know, everything that I've looked at, and I looked at 8 different analysts who calculated this out and predicted, and everybody's saying that by the end of 24, they think it's going to be mid-fives is probably where we're going to land, at best low-fives. That's the best prediction that I've seen. I just recently had Doug Duncan on my podcast. He's the chief economist for Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, probably the best economist in the world, and he really believes that we'll see those rates in that mid-five range in the end of 2024.
Okay, so that certainly takes some pressure off, but certainly not back to where we were. What about assumable mortgages, Dale? Those became just kind of a relic of the past. Are those making a return here?
You know, they're starting to, but they're not going to be a huge factor. You know, with FHA, if you want to get that, you've got to meet the loan requirements for that. USDA, same thing, so that's 3.5% down, plus their FICO requirements. With a VA, the lender's got to approve it. That can be a little bit difficult, and conventionals are usually not assumable. So for a vast majority, they may not qualify or even have that capability. You know, the pros, obviously, that buyers can get that low rate, and for sellers, it can make the home more desirable. But the cons that you've got is it's limited to the current lender as to whether or not they're going to accept it, and you may need to bring money in order for that to happen to the close. For the sellers, they could be responsible for the debt if they're not careful. So it's rare and somewhat complicated. Get an attorney. If somebody has a mortgage you think is assumable, get an attorney.
Got it. All right. Dale Vermillion with us today. We're going to take a quick break, back with what much more. Home values, whether it's a good time to buy or sell, plus your questions. 800-525-7000. This is Faith and Finance. Much more to come just around the corner. Stick around.
For American Family Radio, I'm Charles Morris with Haven Ministries, inviting you to anchor your day in God's Word. It's a cynical world out there. Humans today are quite suspicious of anyone and anything. If someone is smiling, they must be hiding something. If someone is solemn, they're faking it. But there's something that can't be faked. Near the end of Philippians, Paul gives an interesting command. Rejoice in the Lord always. I'll say it again, rejoice. We're told to be joyful. We're not to be joyful just because we bought a new house or got a promotion. We're to be joyful in the Lord. It's a feeling that surpasses the good and the bad. It's knowing that whatever may come, Christ is still with us. This is a feeling we can't fake and a feeling no one can take away. Grow in your walk with Jesus. Visit GetAnchor.com.
Are you struggling to fit your faith into your practice as a Christian financial advisor? The Certified Kingdom Advisor designation teaches you a step-by-step process to confidently deliver advice that aligns with Christian values. Discover the skills you need to help your clients make a kingdom impact. Get started today by enrolling in the CKA educational program at kingdomadvisors.com/getcertified. That's kingdomadvisors.com/getcertified.
The Bible teaches that one day, a time of terrible calamity will grip our world, unleashing disaster and terror like never before. But gratefully, God has revealed the warning signs that will indicate the end is coming. This week on Pathway to Victory, Dr. Robert Jeffress describes the events in Revelation that will take place during the tribulation. Listen all this week to Pathway to Victory.
Weekday mornings at 6 Central on American Family Radio.
What if your everyday purchases could support biblical causes? With the all-new Cash Rewards Visa card from Christian Community Credit Union, a portion of every purchase goes to ministries that spread the gospel, combat human trafficking, and protect vulnerable children. Plus, earn unlimited 1.5% cash back. Visit joinchristiancommunity.com. Membership eligibility required. Each account is insured up to $250,000. This institution is not federally insured.
Hope for Zambia, empowered by Family Legacy, is a ministry providing hope to vulnerable and orphan children in Zambia by investing into their spiritual, intellectual, physical, and emotional growth and well-being. Whether distributing 5 million meals each year to students or empowering them to graduate from high school and go on to pursue post-secondary education, we believe that when you educate a child, you change their world. Go to hopeforzambia.com/faith to transform a life.
To have you with us today on Faith and Finance on American Family Radio. I'm Rob West. He's Dale Vermillion. He's the author of Navigating the Mortgage Maze, The Simple Truth About Financing Your Home. We're going to be taking your calls and questions in this portion of the broadcast, specifically on home buying and selling, mortgages, the mortgage process, what you need to know as you think about securing a mortgage in this environment. As Dale said just a moment ago, you know, we've got rates now, mortgage interest rates north of 7%. Although we expect them to come down slightly, perhaps between now and the end of the year and next year down even further, we're still probably going to not go lower than the fives next year. And there's still the question of interest rates. You know, Federal Reserve Chairman Powell is speaking right now as we speak in Jackson Hole. By the way, Dale, if you're going to give a speech, you might as well go to Jackson Hole, huh? Probably not a bad place to be.
Oh, I love it there. Yeah, we went there 2 years ago, my wife and I. Beautiful.
That's great. Well, apparently he's saying, even now as he's speaking, that specifically he just said inflation was too high and warns that we are prepared, and this is a quote, we are prepared to raise rates further. So some expected he might walk kind of toe the middle of the line. He's obviously being very clear that this fight against inflation is not over. if the Fed funds rate continues to rise. I know they're not automatically correlated to interest rates, but that's certainly going to keep the pressure on mortgage interest rates. Right, Dale?
It will. Yeah, it's not a direct correlation. You're exactly right. But it, all of these things kind of work together in the end, yeah. And it does have an indirect impact.
Yeah, no question about it. All right, you touched on home prices. Let's dig into that just a bit further. Obviously, still a lack of inventory is keeping these prices elevated despite high interest rates, despite the prospect of a recession. So are prices moderating, and where are the forecasts taking that?
Yeah, so the first half of this year, we saw almost a 10% increase in home values, which was much more than predicted. It was only supposed to be 6% for the year, but that started to tail off in June. We saw in June only an annualized rate at 1.6%, which is the lowest we have seen in 11 years. So values are starting to drop, and the reason for that is because listing prices are starting to drop in markets around the country because inventory is sitting longer than it was. So, you know, listing prices are always the leading indicator for sales prices because that establishes what the new market is.
Mm, yeah. But the lack of inventory, some say as much as 2 to 3 million homes that were short in this country based on the demand with, you know, the millennials now reaching age 30 and starting single family homes, folks moving out of densely populated, you know, urban areas out to the suburbs, buying single family homes. I mean, that is providing a support under these prices, right?
It is. I mean, the whole game is always supply and demand like anything in business and life. And because the demand is huge, there's 168 million people between Gen Y and Gen Z, which is almost 50 million more than the two previous generations combined. So that's a big number. That's a lot of demand, and inventory is well short of that. That, again, is why it's so important that new construction is picking up as dramatically as it is. We need that to happen very quickly.
Yeah, very good. We'll ask Dale here in just a moment about whether this might actually be a good time to buy a home. But first, let's head to the phones. We are taking your calls and questions in this portion of the broadcast, specifically related to home purchases, selling a home, and mortgages, what you need to know about navigating the mortgage maze. Let's go to Kentucky. Hi, Martha. Thanks for your patience. Go ahead.
Hi. My name is Martha. I live in Kentucky. My brother owns a home here that he is going to sell. He put my name on the home in case he died. He wanted me to take ownership of it or whatever. So my name is also on that. And he wants to sell it now. So he wants me and my husband to file a quit claim deed.
Yeah.
Would that involve us having to pay taxes on whatever profit he makes on the house? Would we be responsible for taxes on that?
Yeah. In your current situation, you would be responsible for taxes or at least based on the percentage of ownership you have, whatever capital gains taxes would have to be paid on the profit, you would be responsible for the portion that's equal to the percentage of ownership that you have. If you quit claim deeded back to him, and that was the plan all along, that he put it in your name for efficient transfer of it to you at his death, which, by the way, is not the way I would generally recommend you do that. You want someone to inherit that property through a will or a trust or a transfer on death deed, because that brings the stepped up cost basis from a capital gain standpoint. But that's done. And you transferring it back to him, Martha, through a quit claim deed is essentially going to be viewed by the IRS as a gift of the amount that you're giving to him, the value of the home, back to him. But the good news is you're allowed to gift over your lifetime, based on the laws today, the IRS rules and regs, $12 million plus. So as long as you don't plan to gift throughout your lifetime more than $12 million, you're in pretty good shape. You're just going to have to file the gift tax form 709 when you do your taxes. Again, that's not taxable. It's just going to alert the IRS that that needs to come off of your lifetime exclusion of $12 million. Then he will have full ownership of the property, and then he sells it, and then at that point he's responsible for the capital gains, if any. Does that make sense?
Oh, not really to me.
Okay.
Okay, so we are liable for taxes as of, because he wants us to sign this week.
Yeah. So currently, if you're an owner and it's sold, if there's a capital gain, you're going to be responsible for the capital gains taxes based on the portion that you own, the percentage of ownership. If you own 50%, you'll be responsible for 50% of the capital gains. If you own 100, you'll be responsible for all of it. What he's doing is he's having you transfer, you're making a gift of your ownership back to him. Now he's the owner. Now he's responsible for the capital gains. And the only implication to you is you just have to let the IRS know you made that gift back to him. That's not a taxable event. It's just going to be applied to your lifetime exclusion for gifting of $12 million. So here's what you need to do. You need to get a CPA. If you don't normally use a tax preparer, this is the year to do it. If you do, you call that person and say, my brother wants me to quit claim this deed of this property back to him. You know, that was the plan all along for him to be the owner until his death. I need you to help me file the gift tax form as a part of my taxes this year to let the IRS know I'm making this gift back to him, and you're done. There are no taxes that will be paid.
Okay.
All right?
All right. Okay, very good. My husband.
Bottom line is call your CPA, Martha, and he'll take care of it. We appreciate your call today. May the Lord bless you. Dale, you know, we're talking about home values, obviously the lack of inventory. We're talking about the fact that home prices are still high. And in fact, this year, they've actually gone up despite everything going on around us. Talk about that person who's thinking about buying a home. Maybe they've been waiting on the sideline because of everything swirling. And you know, they're wondering, is this actually a good time to buy?
Yeah, well, let me start first with the renter. If you're a renter, it is the right time to buy because, you know, people hold back because of the interest rates. But the fact of the matter is when you look at the escalation of rent year after year after year, which generally many times is more than what you escalate your income by, you're paying a whole lot more if you were to calculate than an interest rate than you would through a mortgage loan. So that's number one, not to mention the fact that you have more stability. You're not in a position where you can get booted at the end of a lease term or they sell the house from underneath you or jack the rent exorbitantly. And interesting statistic, 2/3 of net worth comes from home equity. Homeowner's net worth is 40 times that of a renter. So
let's do this. That was point number one. We're going to hold point number two to after the break. So if you're a renter, now might be the time to buy if you have that down payment and it fits in your budget. We'll talk more with Dale Vermillion just around the corner.
Going back to school can be stressful. New classes, new teachers, a new schedule. It can be overwhelming. Parker May reminds us school in general carries its own special stresses, but they can be overcome. In her article, Overcoming School Stress, Parker pulls the focus from the unknown to the one who knows the future. Remembering God's ability to take away the stress can make this school year the best yet. Read Overcoming School Stress today at afa.net/thestand.
We are grateful for support from One Ascent Investments on the Faith and Finance program. They manage a comprehensive suite of value-based investment strategies designed to help Christian investors live aligned with what they value most. One Ascent believes that if your values inspire the way you live, they should also inspire the way you invest. This can be a unique form of worship. More information is available at investments.oneascent.com. That web address is investments.oneascent.com.
This fall, believers from across America will gather in our nation's capital. We'll hear from government leaders, policy experts, and leading Christian voices, learning how we can engage in government at every level, from local school boards to state legislatures to Congress and even the White House, to win back the soul of our nation. Join with us for the Pray, Vote, Stand Summit, Believe and Engage, September 15th through 17th. Register now at PrayVoteStand.org.
We are grateful for support from Sound Mind Investing in the Faith and Finance program. For more than 30 years, they've been helping Christians reach their financial goals with step-by-step guidance for investors at every stage, from those just getting started to those getting ready for retirement. Through scriptural principles and practical suggestions, SMI offers financial wisdom for living well. More information, including the short video webinar on profit and peace of mind, no matter what's happening in the market, is available at soundmindinvesting.org.
Here at the AFA Foundation, we help families just like yours shore up permanent income for their retirement years through our charitable gift annuities.
Chelsea Wildman.
We would love to work with you to see if a charitable gift annuity is right for your situation.
Call 800-326-4543, extension 345. That's 800-326-4543. 326-4543, extension 345.
Why not reach out to the AFA Foundation team today?
Hey, Greg, I need some advice.
Oh, what's up?
I'm really struggling with finding ways to cut back. With costs going up, especially in healthcare, what do you guys do?
We use CHM, Christian Healthcare Ministries. It's a health cost sharing ministry that's been sharing members' eligible medical bills for over 40 years. Sure helped us stick to our budget. And here's the website, chministries.org. chministries.org.
Great to have you with us today on Faith and Finance. I'm Rob West. With me today, Dale Vermillion. We're talking about mortgages, home buying, and everything in between. If you have a question on those topics here in this segment of the broadcast today, we'd love to hear from you at 800-525-7000. We'll turn the corner to anything financial in the next segment. But right now, if you have a question on mortgages and home buying, 800-525-7000. Dale, you were saying just before the break that for renters specifically, this now may be a good time to buy for those folks. And I know we want to talk about another group of people in a moment, but for those renters, obviously they want to be able to build equity. Rent prices are high, but they also want to still be careful that they're not stretching and buying something they can't afford, right?
That is absolutely correct. You know, you want to make sure you've got the right down payment. You want to make sure you're doing a budget. You want to make sure that you're building a payment that is very affordable to your income. These things are all critical. We talk about these all the time. You never want to buy outside of your means. That's for sure.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Now, what about the other group for home buying?
So, you know, the thing you got to remember about buying a home today is, we mentioned earlier, is inventory is very tight right now. So what a lot of people are doing who want to buy are sidelining to wait for the rates to go down. The problem is when the rates go down, everybody's going to jump back in the market. So you've got the same problem you had back in 2021, 2022, where, okay, now you've got better rates, but there's no inventory and everything is going to have bidding wars on it again. You've got all of those challenges. When you net it out, you may actually be better in a market where there's a lot less buyers in the marketplace to get into that house, as long as you do it right, like we talked about, because rates are going to go down. You can refinance it down in the next year, 2 years, depending on when that happens. And now you lower that payment again, and you only paid that difference for that period of time. Not to mention, the tax advantages are huge right now. The average in the U.S., the median home sales price of a home in the U.S. in July was $436,000. If you pay 7.3%, 7.28, which is today's rate, you have $31,000 in interest deductions alone. That's $4,000 higher than the 2023 standard deduction for a joint married couple. That right there is going to create tax benefits for you that are going to give you thousands of dollars in savings that you'll get back, that you can apply back almost as a rebate, which brings your ultimate interest rate down because of the tax advantages. So there's just a lot of reasons. You can get concessions today, which you couldn't get last year. You're not waiving contingencies like appraisals and inspections like you had to last year and the year before. So there's just a lot of things that are working to the buyer's benefit. The only challenge is the interest rate.
Okay. Yeah, very good. What about selling a home in this environment, Dale?
Well, the sellers are still in pretty good position because, again, when inventory is low and demand is high, you're in a good position of having a benefit as being a seller in this marketplace. The key is you just got to make sure that when you're selling, that you're really making sure you're working with either a realtor or somebody who can really quantify and qualify the people who are making the offers to make sure you're taking the best offer you can possible. And that doesn't necessarily mean the highest price. That means the person who's got the best down payment combined with the best earnest money combined with the best qualifications. These are the things that you're looking for.
Okay, very good. Let's dial into the mortgage industry right now, Dale. Obviously, you're watching everything that's going on in this environment with higher interest rates, still a seller's market. What do folks need to know who are buying a home with regard to the mortgage that they're securing? How many, you know, bids do they need to get? And are there any best practices they need to be aware of right now?
Well, you should talk to at least three lenders. You want to start with your local bank. First off, if you know somebody that can refer you to somebody in the business that's trustworthy, that's the best way to go. But local bank, local credit union, you can talk to a broker or a mortgage banker. You want to get three different quotes. And the key is, be careful of just people quoting you a rate, okay? That can be deceptive. There are ways to change the interest rates by paying additional fees up front. We call it points, where you buy down the rate. And a lot of times what will happen is you'll get a quote for a rate that sounds really good, but the difference is you might bring, you know, have to bring $5,000, $6,000, $7,000, $10,000 to closing to get that rate. So make sure you talk to your lender about, okay, give me the APR, give me the interest rate, and then tell me all the fees that are included so I have the whole picture to look at. That's what you want to look at. And then make sure you're working with a reputable company and somebody that you believe is really going to work on your behalf and really look out for your best interests.
What would be a reasonable percentage of the mortgage that you should expect to pay in fees?
The average is about 2% when you include all of it in. You got to remember, you're going to have title insurance. You're going to have some of the closing costs. But generally, not above 2%. It shouldn't be in any case. And, you know, there are lenders who offer no-point loans, but then you're going to pay a higher interest rate to get that. The thing you want to do is you want to weigh out how long you're going to be there. Okay, if you're going to be there for a long time, then you're better off buying down those points in the front end, getting that lower rate, because you're going to get your money back. There's a break-even point that the loan officer can calculate for you based on what you spent for that buy-down and when that break-even point is. It's generally between a year and a half and 2 years down the road. So if you're going to be in that home for 10 years, you're much better with the lower rate over time because it's going to benefit you.
Yeah, very good. You also mentioned interest rate, and then you mentioned APR. Would you just define the two and help folks understand how they differ?
Yeah, everybody asks the question, what's your interest rate? That's the wrong question. The question is, what's the annual percentage rate? Because the way that a loan works is, your interest rate is what you're paying on the loan amount. But the loan amount can include fees and closing costs that actually change the net cost of your money. That's the APR. So the APR is the actual cost you're paying based on a combination of what the loan amount you're borrowing is and the fees that you're including in that. So don't just ask them, what's your interest rate? Ask them, what's your interest rate? And then ask them, okay, what's the APR? And they're going to say two different numbers, unless there's absolutely no fees or costs on that loan. And if they say it's the same, clarify and say, so there's no fees, no points, and no costs, and they need to agree to it.
Very good. Wow, we've covered a lot of ground today. Dale, we so appreciate you and the time that you give us when you join us periodically. Thanks for stopping by, my friend.
God bless you, brother. I love you. Appreciate it.
Love you too, man. That's Dale Vermillion. He's their author of The Mortgage Maze, The Simple Truth About Financing Your Home. Pick it up wherever you buy books. Your questions on any topic in the next segment. Stay tuned. More to come.
Do you feel like your hands are tied with debt, preventing you from serving God? If you have credit card debt, Christian credit counselors can help. Through our debt management program, we can get you out of credit card debt about 80% faster while honoring your debt in full. For more information on how Christian credit counselors can help, visit ChristianCreditCounselors.org. That's ChristianCreditCounselors.org. Or call 800-557-1985. 800-557-1985.
This is Frank Gaffney, host of Securing America, a program dedicated to protecting the country we love against all enemies, foreign and domestic, to the glory of God and His kingdom. Each weeknight at 11 p.m. Eastern Time, we provide insights and recommendations about the most important challenges facing our nation from her most thoughtful experts and patriots. Join me to learn how you can help in Securing America right here at 11 p.m. Eastern Time.
We are grateful for support from Eventide Investments on the Faith and Finance program. Eventide's approach to values-based investing is grounded in the belief that humankind was created in the image of God, with intrinsic dignity, value, and worth. Eventide calls this investing that makes the world rejoice. More information is available at EventideInvestments.com. That's EventideInvestments.com.
45,000. That's how many times FaithFi referred a listener to a certified Kingdom advisor last year, and for good reason. These are trusted financial, legal, and accounting professionals who have completed a rigorous certification program to ensure biblically wise financial advice as part of their practice. You can find a local CKA professional in your area by going to faithfi.com and clicking on the Find a CKA button on the homepage.
What does the American Family Association stand for?
We believe true morality flows from biblical principles and directs people to the manner in which God intends them to live.
These values and more are part of our mission to inform, equip, and activate individuals to strengthen the moral foundations of our culture. We also support the church. We want to be a leading organization in biblical worldview training for cultural transformation. Thank you for standing with us as we seek to stop the erosion of godly values.
As the leading advocate for the Christian financial industry, Kingdom Advisors serves the public by promoting the integration of a biblical worldview across every aspect of the financial services industry. And we serve a growing network of thousands of Christian financial professionals, equipping and empowering them to carry biblical financial wisdom to their clients, peers, and community. For more information, visit KingdomAdvisors.com. That's KingdomAdvisors.com.
This is American Family Radio, a listener-supported ministry of the American Family Association.
Great to have you with us today on Faith and Finance on American Family Radio. Coming up in our next segment, Jerry Boyer will stop by. We'll have a timely discussion, even as Fed Chairman Powell speaking right now in Jackson Hole, and he's talking about inflation. We'll get Jerry's take on all of that just around the corner. We've had some callers holding patiently. We have room for a few more, 800-525-7000. Tim is a first-time caller in Oklahoma. Tim, go right ahead.
Yes, I really appreciate everything you do. I learn a lot listening to your program, and I just want to say thank you. I have some money in a 401k and also an IRA. My question is, when I know when I buy a individual stock, I have to keep it a year to take advantage of the lower taxes. If you sell it before a year, I don't really know what the tax rate is, but if you keep it over the year and then you sell it, I think you pay like 15% on the capital gains. My question is, when an investment firm, one of them, any of them, Fidelity, Edward Jones, Vanguard, when they buy a individual stock for their client, are they also required to keep it a year before they sell it to take advantage of the lower tax rate, or are they exempt, from doing that because they're an investment firm?
Yeah. Well, are you a couple of things here? Number one is, are you talking about a portfolio in your name where they're the advisor managing it, or are you talking about a mutual fund?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
No,
so
I'm talking about a portfolio
that your name's on. Yeah. So you're responsible for the taxes generated in your portfolio. Your name's on it, attached to your Social Security. The documentation related to the activity in that portfolio is going to be sent to you each, at the end of each year, as well as the IRS. So just because you've authorized an advisor to have trading privileges on the account and make the buy and sell decisions, you're still ultimately responsible for the taxes, which mean yes, absolutely. The same rules apply. In order for something to be qualified as a long-term capital gain, it needs to be an asset that's held for more than a year. Less than that, it would be a short term and therefore subject to ordinary income tax. There is no difference between that reality, whether you're the one buying and selling securities on your behalf or somebody else has been authorized to do that for you.
Okay. All righty. And I have one other question.
Sure.
Okay, my son and I, he's has his own mutual funds, and right now they're doing pretty good. One is up like 45%.
Great.
So my thinking is, should he take some of the profits and put it into a money market or a CD? like roll it over into his own IRA and put it in a secure, like a CD or money market. And then, you know, let's say 2 years down the road or, you know, 6 months, who knows when, but when the market starts going south, then take that money out of that money market and put it back into the market.
No, I wouldn't do that, Tim. I can understand why you might think that would be a winning solution. The challenge is the data will just say, and I've experienced this and watched it unfold in the lives of thousands of people as I've taken calls on the radio over the years. As soon as we try to time the market, that just doesn't work out because then emotions set in. Bottom line is nobody knows. Even the best economists in the world don't know where the market's going to be a month or a quarter from now or a year from now. So who's to say what's the top and what's the bottom? I mean, for instance, case in point would be just what happened in the market during COVID. I mean, we had the fastest sell-off to a bear market in history, and then nobody expected that to turn around and be the fastest recovery to a bull market in history. And yet, if you would have said, well, I know the handwriting's on the wall, the economy's shutting down, this market's going south, so I'm going to cash, and then when we get past this thing, I'm going to get back in and ride it up. Well, invariably, what you and millions of others, what you would have done and what millions of others actually did was they went to cash, they missed the recovery, and then they took the downside, but they missed the upside because they didn't know when to jump back in because nobody does. So what's a better approach, and what I think would be great for you to reinforce with your son, is that investing is not about timing the market. That really is more akin to gambling, unless you're a professional trader. I mean, we're talking about a very small group of people, though. You know, by and large, investing is long-term. It's steady plotting. It's dollar cost averaging, putting a systematic amount into your 401k or your IRA every paycheck. It's buying in when the market's up and the market's down, and it's taking advantage of long-term appreciation in stocks and bonds and precious metals in a properly diversified portfolio. It's not trying to pick entry and exit points. That's just a losing proposition.
Okay. All righty. Well, thank you very much again. Thank you for all you do.
Absolutely, Tim. God bless you, my friend. We appreciate you calling today. Mary is in West Virginia. Go right ahead.
Hi. I was calling today to ask a question about whether or not you would advise using credit cards for the benefits that you can get out of them.
Yeah.
As far as like free stuff or the incentives they offer and things like that, as long as you're paying the balance off at the end of each month.
Yes. Yeah. So my philosophy on credit cards is this, you know, it's kind of like money. Money is morally neutral. It can be used for good or it can be used for evil. It can compete with our hearts for allowing God to have first position in our lives if we're not careful. It can also be an incredible blessing as we give it away and use it to meet the needs of our families and even to enjoy it. Similarly, credit cards are not good or bad. It's how we use them that I think is the key. So as long as, yes, you're using a credit card for budgeted items and you're paying it off in full, then I think that's a proper use of credit cards. They become very convenient. And to your point, they can actually provide you some rewards. So we know that credit card companies make money a lot of ways by over-limited late fees and by interest that people pay. But it sounds like none of those apply to you. So they're not making any money off you. Well, wait a minute. Yes, they are. They're making it in the form of what's called a merchant rebate, which comes from the retailer, not you. So every time you swipe that card, you know, the person that you're buying something from is taking a portion of that transaction and paying the credit card company. Well, the rebates that they're giving in the form of, you know, cash back or, you know, points toward travel, they're just sharing a portion of that merchant rebate back with you. Well, why not take advantage of that? Again, if you're using credit cards the right way for budgeted items, paying them off in full, and the first month you don't pay them off in full, cut them up, or as Larry Burkett used to say, put them on a cookie sheet, put them in the oven and heat that thing up to 400 degrees. No, don't do that. But you know what I mean. So I would say yes, take full advantage of those rebates. And by the way, by going to nerdwallet.com or creditcards.com periodically, you can search and see which credit cards have the very best rates and rebates and rewards. And you may want to switch, you know, once every couple of years. But yeah, I'm in favor as long as you use them properly. Does that make sense?
Perfect sense. Thank you.
Awesome. You're welcome, Mary. We appreciate your call today. Thanks very much. Minnie, I know you have a quick question on your mom's trailer. Unfortunately, I'm going to have to take a break here in a moment, and I don't want to cut you off. So if you stay right there, as soon as we get to the other side of this break, you will be first, and then we'll talk to our good friend Jerry Boyer. Jerry's going to weigh in on the markets today. He's going to update us on what the Fed Chairman Powell is saying, and we might even talk a little about the political futures market. What is that? Well, Jerry will fill you in just around the corner. Stay tuned to Faith and Finance on American Family Radio. We'll be right back.
Just a few weeks ago, in a small Wisconsin town, a pastor's child was arrested for simply sharing the gospel at a drag queen event for children in the public park. It ended well, but it's both a wake-up call and a teachable moment. I'm Sam Rohr, host of Stand in the Gap Weekend, heard Sunday from 6 to 7 p.m. Central Time. Join me, Pastor Isaac Crockett, and Pastor Matt Truella as we learn his story from Wisconsin, Sunday from 6 to 7 p.m. Central Time.
Hannah's Heart, a half-hour program specifically designed to encourage Christian couples walking through infertility and miscarriage.
This is not a show that's going to promise you a certain outcome, but this is a show that says however God answers your cry, we know that He's enough.
Hannah's Heart with Ann Cockrell and Kendra White each Saturday afternoon at 5 Central on American Family Radio. You can find the podcast at afr.net.
If you enjoy this radio program, you're going to love all of the many different resources waiting for you at faithfi.com. You'll find more powerful wisdom, podcasts, articles, videos, and more from partners like the National Christian Foundation, Sound Mind Investing, and Christian Healthcare Ministries. Connect with the community of thousands of Christians striving to be good and faithful stewards, and check out all of the free biblical financial advice at faithfi.com.
We are grateful for support from Sound Mind Investing in the Faith and Finance program. If you have money in a retirement account or just a general investing account, you know the stock market can sometimes seem like a roller coaster. But it is possible to enjoy both profit and peace of mind in investing, no matter what's happening in the market. You can see a short video webinar on that topic at soundmindinvesting.org. Since 1990, Sound Mind Investing has sought to offer financial wisdom for living well. soundmindinvesting.org.
Thanks for joining us today on Faith and Finance on American Family Radio. In just a moment, we'll be talking to our good friend Jerry Boyer. He's our resident economist. We've got a lot to cover with Jerry today. But first, Minnie's been waiting patiently in Ohio. Minnie, how can I help you?
Yeah, thank you for taking my call. My mom passed away 6 years ago. The kids just signed over their inheritance to me so I can have the home. So it's a new mobile home. When she had it built. Just for her, so it has all the energy efficient things. It's got 7 inches of insulation, double hung, double pane windows, all that kind of stuff. And I peeked through so that the water would run off. Anyways, 3 acres. She spent 30 on the trailer. She spent 20 on the land. She's got $100,000 invested, and I got an appraisal of only $30,000. What do I do? Wow. I want to sell it and move back to Texas.
Yeah, boy, that's a huge disparity between what she's got in it and what an appraiser is saying it's worth. Was that actually done by an appraiser? Is it an official appraiser, or was it a broker's price opinion, or what?
It's a realtor.
Well, just a realtor. Okay, so you didn't actually pay for a licensed appraiser to do a full appraisal.
No, I think he said he was an appraiser, but he was a realtor, so I don't know.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I think the first step is to get a second opinion. And that person may be exactly right. And it just may be that for a variety of reasons, the market value is just not supporting what your mom put into it. But I would absolutely, get a second or a third opinion. You could actually hire an appraiser to give you an appraisal, which would cost you $200 or $300, or you could just get another realtor, perhaps. And this person may be that the the person I'm about to describe, but what I would look for is someone who really specializes in real estate in your area. Maybe they've sold a couple of trailers in your particular, you know, mobile home area. You know, maybe they have, you know, they have extensive experience in the surrounding neighborhoods and that kind of thing. So I would look for somebody who can really help you understand what you've got. And, you know, just make sure you have a realistic understanding of the home's value. And then from that point, you just need to work with whoever you decide to go with. And I think it is important that you have a real estate professional working on your behalf, is to clean it thoroughly, remove the clutter, you know, only have necessary furniture, make it look as big as possible, do only any necessary repairs. You know, you don't want to, you know, leave something that will make prospective buyers look someplace else, like leveling issues or, you know, plumbing problems, things like that. And then, you know, you want to, you know, get that realtor to list it at a competitive price. Now, you may end up not getting as much as you thought you should have gotten, but let's at least do our due diligence to make sure that this person wasn't off base. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought about that, and I thought to myself, because she put so much money, she got so much money into just the mobile home itself. If they tell me it's not worth anything, it's worth for me to take it to Texas with me, because I know what she has in it and I know how sound it is. And that way I would have a good home when I started out again.
Yeah. I would just make sure you understand the cost of that and do a lot of homework just to make sure that that's going to make sense in terms of transporting it and all that goes into that. But Minnie, it sounds like you have a little due diligence here to do before you make some decisions. Hopefully you'll find that it's worth, in fact, more than you thought. But, you know, the unfortunate reality here is just because we put money into a home doesn't mean we're going to get it out. Mobile home or single family home. So I think, you know, we've got to understand what is the true market value despite what was put into it, and then decide what is the most prudent course of action. It sounds like, you know, you're already thinking through that, but I'd get a second opinion for sure. Thanks for your call today. We appreciate it. Well, it's Friday, which means Jerry Boyer joins us. He's president of Boyer Research. He's our resident economist here at Faith and Finance. And Jerry, if you're going to give a speech, you might as well go to Jackson Hole to do it. That's where Chairman Powell is right now. And apparently he's talking right now about how inflation is still too high, huh?
Yeah, well, I actually have given a speech at Jackson Hole.
Well, there you go. See?
And it was at an economic summit. What I really noticed about Jackson Hole, and I think it really helps explain the quality of the comments that we see coming out of the Fed chairman, is that there's very little oxygen up there.
Really, what do you really think about what he's saying right now, Jerry?
It's very high. It's almost up to the stratosphere. You have a headache a little bit most of the time, and you walk up a few steps and you're out of breath, and you think, am I getting out of shape? It's like, oh no, I'm up where they're, you know, up in the Grand Tetons. So when I speak, I have trouble keeping my breath. So yes. I don't know if it affected the quality of my speech. But actually, the problem with Chairman Powell isn't intelligence. The problem, in fact, the theologian Cornelius Van Til said, if somebody is highly intelligent and they have the wrong presuppositions, they will more reliably come to the wrong conclusions. So in that sense, intelligence is just, he used the analogy, if you've got a saw and you set it a certain way, a miter saw or whatever, and at night your kid comes in and messes with the settings, a really highly precise miter saw will highly precisely cut the wood the wrong way. And I think the same thing is true when it comes to economics or any worldview issue. So, you know what he's saying is, oh, no. We haven't had a recession yet. Oh, no, the economy hasn't slowed down enough. And because in his Keynesian mind, which he is consistently applying, you have to fight inflation by slowing down the economy and maybe risking a recession. So his remarks saying the economy hasn't slowed down have been interpreted by the markets as, we haven't solved the inflation problem yet. By the way, we haven't solved the inflation problem yet, but the solution isn't to slow down the economy. The solution is to speed up the economy.
Yes.
Growth fights inflation. You can get a little bit of price relief if people are too afraid to buy during a recession, but you just go back to the same old problem. And markets interpreted it that way, but they're still trying to figure it out. So the futures market, I'm talking about the Fed futures market. There's a market for everything.
Yeah.
Like, we're going to talk about political futures in a moment.
Yes.
And one of the markets is essentially saying, what will the Fed do by the end of the year? And what those markets are predicting, you buy futures in Fed funds. I know that sounds really technical. It's essentially a way of registering your belief and profiting from it, if you're right, of whether the Fed's going to raise or not. And right now, there's about a 42% probability they'll raise by the end of the year. But before his speech, that was in the 20s. So markets said, okay, we got it. We know how he thinks. He thinks like a Keynesian. The economy hasn't slowed down. We haven't had a recession. He's going to keep, probably going to keep hiking, and then markets respond accordingly.
Yeah. Just quickly, if you were in Jackson Hole and he handed you the keys to the Fed, what would you be saying, Jerry, about the course forward from here?
Well, when I was in Jackson Hole, no one gave me the keys to the Fed. If someone did, I might melt them down. But, you know, what I said in Jackson Hole is that if you believe that being economically productive is a gift of God, and part of being in the image of God, and you follow those principles and you support it with sound currency, then you are highly likely as a nation to outpace other nations in terms of economic growth and human flourishing. And then I show 2,000 years of economic history to show how that played out. So I think if I were there at Jackson Hole for the Fed, I think I'd say the same thing, which is just keep the money stable, don't micromanage the economy, and just reward people for being productive. Don't punish people for being productive, and let the economy do what God created it to do, which is to reflect our reflection of his image in us, to be creative and to be wealth producers.
Wow. Yeah, it sounds so simple, and yet it's very biblical, and that's God's design, what you're describing, Jerry, and from your mouth to God's ear in terms of where we go from here. All right, Jerry, you mentioned there's a futures market for everything, and that includes people putting money down, saying who they think is going to be the next president. In light of the debates this week, what are the political futures saying?
It's really fascinating. The commentary is about, you know, who's going to be the next president or who's going to be the nominee. But the political futures market, so what is that? In essence, you buy a kind of a security. I mean, it's regulated by the CFTC. You buy that security, and if you buy a Trump future and Trump wins, you get a dollar, right? So if Trump futures cost 50 cents, then that means that there's a 50% probability that he'll win. Or you can buy, you know, Biden futures or whatever else. Or you can buy futures just with which party will win. If Democrats to win the presidency sells for 57 cents for a dollar, and what, you know, what that implies is that there's a 57% probability that they'll win, which is exactly what it said. So what shifted this week? Nothing shifted with the probability of which party is going to win the presidency. Well, the Democrats picked up 1 percentage point probability. That's it. So essentially unchanged. Nothing changed with who's going to win the general election, or nothing even changed with who's going to win the primary, not in any substantial way. Vivek Ramaswamy picked up a point or two, but is definitely not expected. All of the action was in the vice presidential futures market. And it seems what the futures market is saying is those people might think they're running for president, but they're really running for vice president. And we are going to evaluate the probability of that. So Vivek picked up the most vice presidential futures probability. But he didn't, like I said, he didn't really budge. No one looked at that debate and looked at any of those people and said, oh, they're going to beat Trump in the primary. That didn't happen for anybody. But there were shifts in terms of who might, you know, be asked by a nominee Trump to be the vice president.
Fascinating. Jerry, just 15 seconds left. The futures market, typically more reliable than polls?
Yeah, very much so, because it's skin in the game. you know, yep. when people put skin in the game, when there's money at stake, they pay more attention than just talking to a pollster and kind of sounding off.
Fascinating. Jerry, always appreciate you, my friend. Have a great weekend.
Same to you. God bless.
All right. That's Jerry Boyer. I'm Rob West. On behalf of Robert Youngblood, Jim Henry, and Devin Patrick, this has been Faith and Finance on American Family Radio. Have a great weekend. Hey, do me a favor. Come back and join me on Monday. I'll do it all over again. We'll see you then. Bye-bye.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.